Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
What did Han Solo say to Luke Skywalker on Thanksgiving? May the Force be with you. Why did the cow cross the road? To get to the other silo. Why did the barf and the booger fall in love? It's what's on the inside that counts.
Can you, like, shut up?
If you just read the bio for Dr. Steve, host of Weird Medicine on Sirius XM 103 and made popular by two really comedy shows, Opie and Anthony and Ron and Fez, you would have thought that this guy was a bit of, a clown.
Why can't you give me the respect that I'm entitled to?
I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valve, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast it with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for my ailments, the health equivalent of Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve.
Dr. Steve!
From the world-famous Cardiff Electric Network Studios, it's Weird Medicine, the first and still only uncensored medical show in the history of broadcast radio, now a podcast. Dr. Steve with my little pal, Dr. Scott, the traditional Chinese medicine practitioner, gives me street cred with the wacko alternative medicine ass hats. Hello, Dr. Scott.
Hey, Dr. Steve.
And we have Dave from Rhode Island. Hello, Dave.
Hello.
We'll be introducing Dave in a little bit. Yes, he's very happy to be here. This is a show, not for long, maybe. This is a show for people who would never listen to a medical show on the radio or the internet. If you have a question, you're embarrassed to take your regular medical provider. If you can't find an answer anywhere else, give us a call. 347-766-4323. That's 347. Take it away, Dave.
Poohhead.
Oh, excellent. Follow us on Twitter at Weird Medicine or at drscottwm, and visit our website at drsteve.com for podcasts, medical news, and stuff you can buy. Most importantly, we're not your medical providers. Take everything here with a grain of salt. Don't act on anything you hear on this show by talking over with your primary care provider, your acupuncturist, whatever. Tacy isn't here, so I couldn't do the list. Just talk to somebody about it. Don't listen to us. We're stupid. Don't forget stuff.drsteve.com, stuff.drsteve.com for all your Amazon needs and all your online shopping needs. It really makes a huge difference. So if you're going to shop online, please use stuff.drsteve.com. And then check out Dr. Scott's website at simplyherbals.net. That's simplyherbals.net. He gets most of his business from Weird Medicine People. Plus, I gave him some of these
super cool chips,
Weird Medicine poker chips.
They are
so
cool.
If you buy something, the next, how many you've got there? The next 10 orders.
The next 10 orders.
Really, the next probably 100 orders. I'll give him some poker chips.
He's got a lot of poker chips, people.
Check us out at patreon.com/weirdmedicine. We do what's going to be there. If you have not heard the full audio from the roast of Carl and Vinny, my set will be on Patreon by the time you hear this. So patreon.com/weirdmedicine. That's mostly Tacy and me, and then we'll sometimes have celebrities call in and ask us questions. It's kind of fun. It's called the exam room. It's a stupid name, but we have to have a name for it. And it's loads of fun, and check it out, patreon.com/weirdmedicine. And then just today, I did a cameo for a guy, Pope John Paul, I think. The guy's name was John Paul. It only could be one of those, right?
It's got to be.
And I'm like, hey, how you doing? So it was really stupid. From the love of his life. So I don't know.
Oh, my God.
But yeah, they were listeners to the show, and we really appreciate them. So check that out, cameo.com/weirdmedicine. Well, with that rough start, good Lord. Well, I only got 4 hours of sleep last night, Dr. Scott. Not that anybody gives a shit.
No.
Nope. Nobody cares. All right. Fair enough. Dave.
Hello.
So Dave, we've been talking about Dave for some time. He has a trigger finger, and we were going to get PA shit, a.k.a. BM Dave. John, a.k.a.
PA loser.
PA fucked shit. Yeah.
Fuck PA John.
Yes, that's right. Thank you. Very good. That's... We're going to get P.A. John in here to inject your trigger finger, and then he gets here, and he's like, well, I've been wearing a splint for the last couple of weeks, and it's totally fine. I mean, it's not triggering anymore. So so we wouldn't have injected it anyway, so it worked out okay. We probably should talk about what a trigger finger really is, though. What did you first notice?
It was several years ago, probably 5 years ago. It just started clicking a little bit.
Now, when you say clicking, what do you mean? Is this your middle finger on your dominant hand?
Correct. Yes.
Okay, yep.
If I were in the fist position and tried to straighten it out, it would hold up basically.
Okay.
Momentarily, and then it would sort of pop out.
Okay. Yeah. So you would have to put some tension on it.
Right.
The other fingers would be straight up and down, so it looked like you were doing some sort of gang sign or something.
Yep, exactly.
And then all of a sudden, you would have to put enough tension, then dunk, it would pop up, and then it would be straight again.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
And then what happened?
It just progressed over the course of a few years, and got to the point where when I woke up in the morning, it wouldn't straighten out. A short period of time, but it's, it's disconcerting. There's no pain involved.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not, you know, it bugged the shit out of me.
Sure. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you were a guitar player, a piano player, it would really suck.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So, and your wife would always know when you were, you know, pleasuring yourself because you'd come out of the bathroom with your finger.
Oh, Lord. No, that's you, Dr. Steve.
Oh, yeah.
Your silence and then, son of a bitch.
Yeah. So did you ever seek medical attention for this?
So after communicating with you a couple of months ago.
So this went on for how long before you communicated with me?
Just 4 or 5 years.
Jeez. This is a typical dude.
That's why I like it.
This is a typical dude. Nothing wrong with that.
Exactly. Give yourself a bill!
So after communicating with you, I coincidentally had my yearly checkup with my PCP.
Okay.
And I asked him about it. I asked him about a cortisone injection, and he was aware of that, but had never done it, and was unwilling to
had never done it.
Right. Experiment on me.
Is he family medicine or internal medicine?
Internal medicine.
Oh, that's why they don't do a lot of procedures like that.
Okay. Yeah. I love my PCP. He's
fantastic. Nothing wrong with an internist.
Yeah. Well, depends. Some of
the family medicine people suck, too. I mean, there's shitty hospice doctors out there.
There's shitty of everything.
Yeah,
so.
Right. Yeah, they're shitty of everything. That's very profound. That's exactly right.
Yep.
God damn it. We're making a shirt.
Yes.
They're shitty of everything. That's
very profound.
Yes, it is. But it's very true.
Yes.
Yep.
So your internist didn't do it because they've never done it, done a pap smear, never done, you know, there's a lot of things that internists haven't done. I need to tell you a story when your story is done about, and don't let me forget about an internist. Well, I've got two or three stories like that. And the internists out there will understand this, that working in the emergency room where they could see women and children, which they've really, most of them have never seen before. But anyway, go ahead.
And so, you know, you mentioning the cortisone injection piqued my interest. And at that point, it was getting worse anyway. So the point where, you know, wouldn't straighten out, primarily in the morning.
Is that right? Yeah.
I guess I clench my fist when I sleep.
Yeah, sure.
So this is just going back maybe 3 or 4 weeks. I just did a search for a splint, figuring I should splint it.
Damn it.
Yeah, exactly. So I started wearing a splint again, maybe, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And
tell us what the splint did to you. How did it hold your hand and what position it hold
it? Keeps the finger in the
yeah
the old trigger finger
keeps the finger erect.
Yes.
And it, yeah, it's got a little, and I realize people can't see this, but.
No, they can, actually. The ones that are watching.
Yeah, they can now. Yep.
Yep.
So it's got a little flap that comes down here, so prevents the finger.
When he says here, he's talking about the base of his finger,
right into the palm, so that it won't straighten.
Yeah,
I felt an improvement immediately. Mm-hmm. I mean, the first night.
Yeah,
and I meant to bring it with me actually.
No, it's okay. You know, so I know what it is. Tell. I was really just trying to get you in here to do a cortisone injection before we messed with any of that stuff. But yeah, there are exercises you could do, but the key is to decrease the amount of friction on that tendon. Mm. So what's going on is you've got a little, if the tendon going to the end of your finger didn't have some sort of, like a band at the bottom of your finger to apply some
tension point.
Well, yeah, it's a tension point, but it's kind of a fulcrum too.
Yeah,
you know, to
well, true,
a,
yeah, true,
so
true.
It's like a pulley, and it pulls through this band at the bottom of your finger because
makes
if
sense.
It didn't do that, it would just bow out,
right? Mm-hmm.
And you would end up with this, you know, you'd have this weird sort of web-like thing where now you have an actual finger, and what happens is that the tendon above that little band that goes circumferentially around the base of your finger gets inflamed, and when it gets inflamed, it gets enlarged, and now it can't fit, and it's also tapered too. So when you flex your finger, in other words, bringing the tip of your finger toward the palm, it will slide below that band, but then it can't get back up again because it's too large to do that. It's like, it's not too dissimilar to those penis fish that swim up your urethra and they can only go in, but you can't pull it back out because it's got fins on it.
Barbs
and stuff. Yeah. So this thing doesn't really have barbs, but it's shaped that way that it's easier for it to slip down one way than the other.
Yeah.
And so you can just immobilize it, and what that'll do is it'll just decrease the amount of wear and tear, which decreases the inflammation. And then it'll shrink. Oh, okay. And a lot of times that's all you need. Mm. For the reason I didn't even bother you with that was because when you first contacted us, and by the way, he came down here from Rhode Island to get this thing done on the air. When you first contacted us, it had been 4 or 5 years, so I figured that would be just nuts to even try it. Mm-hmm. So, in this case, I'm glad I was wrong because P.A. John was supposed to inject your finger today, and he didn't show up. So.
Well, if he sticks around long enough.
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
If Dave sticks around long enough, I'll stick some needles in his finger. Because we do treat it.
When I talked to Scott, and talk about doing this from an acupuncture standpoint, because you and I have talked about this. One of the things I think that acupuncture does is change some of the inflammatory pathways.
That's exactly right. I literally would just take where his finger hurts and put little needles around where the tendon is in that.
How the fuck would that do anything?
Oh, it increases blood flow.
Okay.
Decreases inflammation.
All right.
Yeah, just exactly what you were just saying.
I know, but how does it, what's the mechanism steroid, that would decrease inflammation? Well, you're right.
Well, the needles
it
are
may
noxious
just be
stimulants.
The needling.
Yeah. The needles are noxious stimulants.
Could just be the needle and not the cortisone.
Exactly.
That does something in
that. And there's a lot of research that supported trigger point injections a lot of times are just as effective, if not more effective, when you don't use steroids.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, especially over time, and because the steroid will break down the muscle, and the needles are so large it actually causes a scarring in the tissue.
Well, here you go. Yeah. Effects of dry needling on tendon pulley architecture. That's what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Pain and hand function in patients with trigger finger, a randomized control trial study.
Oh, here we go.
Now, it's hard to do a placebo when you're sticking needles in somebody's hand, but anyway, that's okay. Mm-hmm. So let's see what they came up with. What's their conclusion? The results suggest that single session of dry needling was effective in decreasing pain. And then the DASH score is like, it's a score that we use in impairment ratings to determine function of the upper extremity. So, mm-hmm. and the lower, the better. Pulley tendon thickness and improving pinch grip power in patients with trigger fingers. So, and that's something. So it may be that all this time I've been sticking people with needles with cortisone in them.
And them going, ouch, Dr. Steve, ouch, Dr.
Well,
Steve.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And you go, oh, it made them better. Might have done just the same if I just stuck the damn needle in there.
And so you can do these little teeny needles like diabetic needles.
Well, there you go.
Instead of these gigantic needles.
Give yourself a bill.
I'll give you one of those, Dr. Scott.
Hey, thanks. Yeah, hey, Sean, that's number one, accountant.
What?
No, Sean, I'm having Sean count my bills today.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even understand. He thinks it's bills. It's bell. Give yourself a bell. Ding. It's an opiate.
For the longest time, I thought it was bill.
I know. All right. Well, anyway, it's an opiism. He used to do that all the time. And so when I'm on Anthony's show, I like to give him lots of give yourself a bell.
Good for you.
If you go to our Patreon, patreon.com/weirdmedicine, I had Anthony on there. Mm. And that show is a little different. It's called The Exam Room, where they get to ask us questions. Mm. And anyway, I gave him one of those, and his reaction was priceless. So anyway, I love both of my erstwhile colleagues. So.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's very interesting. So you did the dry needling thing, and they also sell You did the trigger finger splint. Mm-hmm. They sell trigger finger tape. I think any of those things are fine. Anything short of sticking a needle in it with cortisone, I think that should be the last resort.
Agreed. And you know, stretches, Dr. Steve, like those, you know, we call them the prayer stretches, where you put your hands in front and just gentle pressure, where you have your hands pulled together down in front of your chest, can help to stretch those tendons out. There are a lot of things much less invasive and much less painful than the cortisone shots.
Yeah.
But I'm all for less pain.
Me too, man.
So I have a thing that's not dissimilar from this, and it's called Dupuytren contracture. Mm-hmm. When I was in medical school, they called it Dupuytren. Mm-hmm. But I have actually, here, this is the proper way to pronounce it. Here we go.
We are looking at how to pronounce this name of French origin, as well as how to pronounce more famous French names. Okay. So make sure to stay tuned and consider subscribing. A French anatomist and military surgeon. So how do you go about pronouncing it? In French, in France, it is said as Dupuytren.
Dupuytren. So anyway. This is an enlargement of the tendons of the hand, and if you let it go far enough, it'll actually cause a contracture of the hand that's not completely dissimilar. But
the whole hand?
The whole hand, yeah. Mm. And these are in the palm of the hand. I've got nodules in the palm of my hand. That's just from being old, and I saw my friend who's a hand surgeon, and as soon as he heard I had nodules in the palm of my hand, he said, let's see your Dupuytren's contracture. And it's like, well, but I'm not contracted. And this is from all the years of training I had. He said a huge percentage of people that have this never get the contracture. Mm-hmm. Now, I've got some people that have fingers that are contracted up. Yep. And you can see the tendon is contracted under the skin, and those require surgery if you're going to fix them.
Yep.
But doing that same, what do you call this, prayer pose?
I just call it a prayer stretch. Yep.
Yeah, prayer stretch.
So you got to put your palms together right in front of your face. There you go. So that way when you go down towards your chest,
keep your
palms together.
Yeah, except that for the Dupuytren, I would think that separating it and doing like that. Though.
Well, if you try to keep them further down you go, the better.
Yeah, okay. Well,
because that way you get the whole flexor tendon.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, you ought to know. You're the damn genius, I guess.
Ancients.
All right. So anyway, so Dave gets here and I'm like, let me see it. And he's like, tuk, 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 you know, just moving his hand around. It's like, well, shit, I wouldn't have injected that anyway. So I'm glad it's better, though.
Yes. Yep.
And we're glad you're here.
Yes,
me too.
You have other things of interest to talk about. You have an interesting job where you're doing, well, tell us without naming names, so tell us what your job is, because it's fascinating.
Well, I work for a small Dutch company, actually. We have our U.S. site in Western Maryland, I spend...
That narrows it down pretty well. So anyway.
Most of my time. But we're a chemistry services company. We store research chemicals for the pharmaceutical industry, primarily the pharmaceutical industry.
Okay.
But these are chemicals that are used to basically help them discover new drugs.
This is the interesting part. So people are saying, oh, God, he stores chemicals. Who gives a shit?
I hear people snoring already.
Talk a little bit about the high volume discovery or whatever the F it is.
Right.
Because I have a reason why I'm asking you about this.
So we are, we're the chemistry end of drug discovery where chemistry and biology meet. It's called high throughput screening.
High throughput screening, that's right, it.
So biological screening is where you take in this case, a small molecule and put it against a biological target, a cell or a protein or
something that you're trying to find a receptor for something. What drugs will affect that receptor?
Exactly. Okay. Yep. It's done in parallel. So, and they'll do it's called high throughput for a reason. They may do 100,000 at a time.
Wow.
So they'll take the same biological assay and throw 100,000 different small molecules at it. At the same time. Now, the vast majority of the drugs on the market are small molecules.
Yep.
I mean, picture a caffeine molecule.
Right. Yeah.
You know, one or two.
Yeah, they're not giant rings. Protein molecules.
Right. They also exist, but majority are small molecules. Certainly orally viable drugs.
Yeah.
So pharmaceutical companies amass millions of these over the course of years. Now, something that's made for a target now may not, likely won't work for that target. But they don't throw that away if it doesn't.
Right.
They keep it and they try it against the next one and the next one. So something a chemist synthesized 30 years ago or 50 years ago could be the next multi-billion-dollar-a-year drug. It's just that the chemistry and the biology didn't.
So why I bring this up, you could have, let's just say, an ACE2 receptor in the lung that you happen to know that a certain virus's spike protein will attack that thing. So you could run a bunch of drugs past that and see which ones might be worth looking at.
Exactly.
So you could pull something off the shelf. So they did this at UCSF. And they used some artificial intelligence thing. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't, but I'm...
But you have an idea anyway. And guess what popped out? Two of the drugs that popped out of that screen for off-the-shelf drugs for COVID-19 were...
Watch it now. You're going to get a skip.
I know. Hydrochlorothiazide and azithromycin. So there was a reason why people were fixating on those drugs because they were easily obtained. And they were inexpensive, and they popped up on these high-throughput assays. Now, they didn't turn out to be very effective, at least not in the general population. But the people who were pushing those things, I'd be the first to say, because I was not on board with this, I'm an empiricist. I got to see the data. But I understand why people jumped on the bandwagon quickly because they were desperate for something we could just yank off the shelf. Hmm. And that's why I found what you're doing interesting, because that's where that came from, is that same sort of thing where you're just screening drugs and molecules and things, just what might work with this. And then if you find something that's very specific for that receptor or that moiety on a protein or whatever it is that you're changing the way it folds or whatever that you're doing, then you can zero in on it and maybe see, well, okay, if we put a methyl group here or a chloride ion here, maybe this thing will work a little bit better.
Absolutely.
It gives them somewhere a starting point.
Yeah, absolutely. And, point of note, that's the beginning of a very long process, a multi-year, even decade or more long process from, initial discovery to anything that gets on the market.
And billions of dollars.
So
I'm in favor of getting a grip on drug prices. But the other thing is, I don't want to stifle innovation either. And how do you balance that? That's the thing. I mean, I fancy myself as a libertarian. I don't know if I'm really a libertarian or if I'm a Jimmy Dore, progressive, because I've got some things that I really agree with him on, and he's a free speech guy. It's like, oh, I didn't know you could be that far left and be that free speech. But I'm not 100% sure what I am, but I do know that – I know. That's hilarious. Somebody isolate
that. You're unidentified.
But, you know, I want peace on earth and I want, you know, goodwill toward all men and all that stuff. But I wouldn't mind having a southern border that at least we had some control over. But, you know, because I do see the after effects of smuggling fentanyl into the country and that kind of stuff. I see that every day. But I don't know the answer to this because I don't want the government to just control it. I want people to make money, but I don't want Martin Shkreli just, you know, gouging the shit out of people with the EpiPen either.
Right.
I mean, allegedly. You know, I don't know Martin, so. But, you know.
Yeah, no, totally. And I think, you know, some of the people who are crying for controls, you know, don't realize that.
Skull! Sorry.
You know, so it costs, say, $1 billion to get a drug to market on average. You know, there are plenty that fail in phase three.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So that's $1 billion that they're never going to get back.
Oh, yeah.
And also, this is an old stat, so, you know, take it with a grain of salt, but something like only two or three out of five drugs on the market will actually provide a full return on investment.
Yeah.
So that when
those are ones that actually make it to market.
Right.
Now, I'm not going to boo-hoo and feel, you know, too sorry for the pharmaceutical industry, but there are a lot of people that lose their jobs when this shit happens. My wife was one of them. She was not a, you know, multi-billionaire, but she got murdered metaphorically. In other words, she got retired against her will because, you know, multi-billion-dollar drug didn't make it to market.
Yeah.
So,
When we're off, please tell me who it is.
Yeah. I will. But there are real life consequences to real people for these things. Yeah. And it's not just, you know, the fat cats at the top, although they do really, really well. But, you know, there's the pharmaceutical industry. Well, shit, I'll catch hell no matter what I say about this. But there are millions of people that are employed by the pharmaceutical industry.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I've made my living off the pharmaceutical industry for 37 years.
Yeah, so, there you go.
So, you know, I'm under no illusion that they're always on the up and up with their business practices. But
sure.
Certainly, I know hundreds or whatever researchers that are on the front lines trying to discover new drugs. And they're genuinely, in it for the good.
Yeah.
I mean, they are trying to cure diseases.
Yeah. Well, and we're so much closer. We've been talking about CAR T cell therapy on this show. And really 5 years ago, we were talking about like, oh, this is something that we're going to see, you know, 100 years from now.
I remember you talking about
They're selling it now.
Yeah. Yep. And making more and more progress in that.
Yes.
So
all the time.
Immunotherapy. Yeah.
And I know that my brothers and sisters in naturopathy will, you know, talk about preventing disease, but they aren't anywhere close to doing things like CAR T cell therapy.
Right.
So, yeah, it'd be better if we could prevent all of it. It'd be great. Well, I'd love to be out of a job. Everybody live fucking forever, would never have pain. That's a world I would love to live in. I'd be happy to give up my job for that.
Yeah. There's just no money in that. The research part for not getting sick, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
All of it's in treatment, which at least we have something, you know, treatment, thank God, versus nothing.
Yeah.
You know,
can't make billions preventing cancer, can you?
No.
That's a good point.
No, unfortunately so.
Oh, well.
We'll do our best to keep people semi-healthy. Hey, Logan Field was asking, are you involved with HPLC?
I used to do HPLC.
Wait a minute, is that someone who knows me?
No.
It's just high performance liquid chromatography.
Yeah, chromatography. Right. So yeah, I guess Logan Phil used to be in that business. Yep.
I was involved with HPLC for many years.
Yeah,
actually,
me too. When I was in immunology,
I dealt with discovery labs that were using HPLC for the purification of their candidates.
Yeah.
So
that's what we would do.
Yeah.
Is we would have monoclonal antibodies generated by these, you know, mutant cells or these, what's the merged cells. And you would have this ELISA test that would tell you which ones of these pots is making the protein that you want. Hmm. And then you'd have to run these things through the HPLC to separate all, you know, basically you take the liquid in one end and it just stretches it out. So things of different molecular weights would come out at different times.
Gotcha.
And then you would see these peaks and you would grab that tube and you get the next peak and grab that tube. And then you would test those and you would find which one was actually causing the effect that you wanted.
Gotcha. Mm.
Now you've got it. You can do all kinds of stuff with it.
Right.
That's, you know, that's neat. I loved doing just sort of basic science stuff. But Logan Field actually had a question for us. And here it is, and let's just go ahead and play it while we're at it. And first thing I guess we need to do is...
Number one thing, don't take advice from some asshole on the radio.
Real quick question for you. I've been seeing a lot of things on the internet recently regarding calcification...
It must be true, but...
...of the pineal gland.
Okay.
A lot of people out there believe that fluoride in the water that's being added to it is causing the problem of the calcification of the pineal gland. And there's a lot of people out there that feel like it's a way to suppress the masses, to suppress creativity, to control population. A lot of weird stuff going on out there. I was calling in to find out.
John, A.K.A. Logan Field. Where do we get the idea that the pineal gland is responsible for creativity? That's the first question. So that, let's let him finish.
What's the deal with them adding fluoride to the water?
Yeah,
it's 2022 right now. You think that people
still have fucked up teeth, though, bro?
These days would know enough about good dental habits, and
I think so. I mean, I do wonder if we need to continue to do community water fluoridation, but lots of studies over 75 years have shown that it's safe at the levels that they put in the water. Now, I remember when Jesse Ventura was on Opie and Anthony, and he was talking about, you know, fluoride is one of the ingredients in... I can't do a Jesse Ventura impression.
It's not too bad.
That wasn't bad, actually. Yeah.
Is one of the ingredients in Prozac. And it's like, shut the fuck up. The one time, you know, when he talked about HARP, I don't know what he's talking about. When he talked about all these other mind control things, I didn't know why. The one time he talked about something I know something about, which is organic chemistry, he completely shit the bed. Because it's not like... Prozac, and so his thing was, since there's three fluoride ions in Prozac, that putting fluoride in the water is a way to pacify the masses. Now, number one, does anybody here feel like the masses are pacified in this country right now? That's number one. But number two, Prozac isn't a cake. It is a molecule, and so there's a huge difference in the chemical activity of a fluoride ion put in the water, which is a naked fluorine atom, versus fluoride ions in a molecule. Because in the molecules place, what those fluoride ions are there to do is to drag electrons away from the rest of the molecule. And because they love electrons. And so they'll drag them away from the rest of the molecule to make it more active. That's all it is. You could have three hydrogen atoms on there, but it wouldn't be as active a molecule in the body. So they do that so you don't have to take 2 grams of Prozac. You just have to take, you know, 40 milligrams or whatever. So that was bullshit. So then I started realizing that a lot of the things that people were saying about fluoride in the water was bullshit. Fluoridated water is known to improve dental strength. It also reduces cavities by about 25%. So you go, well, should we do it for 25%? 25% across 350 million people is a big deal, and it saves money for people. For families not going to the dentist as much, and the U.S. healthcare system. So now, Delta, he's right. Oral health is better than it was years ago, but cavities are still a thing. If everyone would get fluoride treatments from their dentist as children after they get their permanent teeth in, you might be able to prevent some of this stuff, and we might be able to stop putting fluoride in the water. But if you don't want fluoride in your water, then drink, you know, distilled water, or move out in the country where you have a spring and a well, and then deal with what friends of mine in Vermont did when I lived in Vermont. They, our water tastes kind of funny. It's tasting a bit off. And then they go up to the well house, the spring house, and there's a dead deer in there. Oof. And it had been there for probably about 3 months. Had died in their spring house, and they were drinking. They were drinking dead deer tea, basically.
Lovely.
So you can do that, or you can just deal with the fluoride. But anyway, so now when it comes to the pineal gland, he brings up an interesting point. The pineal gland does concentrate, dietary fluoride, and there are. Older folks who have pineal gland dysfunction, and basically it's in, you know, people with Alzheimer's disease, and they'll get calcification of the pineal gland, and it messes with their sleep, and it messes with their ability of their nervous system to fix itself, and this sort of immune / pineal axis and things like that. And the pineal gland is a little gland in the back part of the brain where there is fluid.
Fluid.
And thank you. And it basically has to do with day-night cycles and things like that. Now, this is sort of interesting. So I found an article, melatonin is produced in the pineal gland. Hmm. Fluoride exposure and sleep patterns among older adolescents in the United States. So I'll just read you the results. The average age of the adolescents was 17, and the median water and plasma fluoride concentrations were 0.27 and 0.29 respectively. And an increase in water fluoride was associated with a 2 times higher odds of reporting symptoms suggestive of sleep apnea, and 24-minute later bedtime, and a 26-minute later wake time, and among males a 38% reduction in the odds of reporting snoring. So it was good when it came to snoring, but bad when it came to symptoms like fatigue, even after they got a decent sleep. They were going to bed later and getting up later. So is any of this clinically relevant? We don't know. That's the answer. Well, that is the absolute answer. Does this concentration of fluoride in the pineal gland lead to calcifications? I don't think we can draw the line between those two points yet. But it's interesting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing is, though, if we don't put the fluoride in the water, which I'm okay with, if everybody will go get their teeth worked on and brush their damn teeth and all that stuff and floss and do all the things and get fluoride treatments, would there be any difference in getting a fluoride treatment? You get a huge concentrated amount of fluoride all at once. Mm-hmm. Versus getting a little bit. I mean, we're talking about nanogram amounts. Mm-hmm. You know, let's see. Maybe Echo knows. Echo, what's the concentration of fluoride in fluoridated water? Does she know?
From dunedengov.com. Fluoride levels naturally occurring in water pumped from the Floridan aquifer to the city of Dunedin's RO water treatment plant is 0.2 parts per million.
Okay, so that's in one place. So, yeah, and there is, let's not forget, there is natural fluoride in some water, and some aquifers have much higher levels than others. Some of them have higher fluoride levels than is what the municipalities will put in the water. Hmm. So that's kind of interesting.
I didn't know that.
Anyway, yeah, good question. Let's see if he has anything else to say here.
Just trying to figure out why are they still having to add fluoride to the water in 2022.
I don't know.
They could be adding a lot better stuff to it than fluoride.
Like what? Okay, like microdosing. He would be in favor of just putting psilocybin in the water. I do understand that. All right. Who's the football expert here? No one? Okay.
That'd be me.
That would be you? Okay, well, let's do this one.
Of course.
Okay. Hey, Dr. Steve. This is Phil from Tampa. I'm calling because I have a slightly longer question, but I will
do my best to be brief.
Okay.
I don't know if you or anyone there follows football, but this most recent week, the Miami Dolphins quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa, he had a concussion, and it was pretty serious. And last week, he was injured, what looked like a concussion, but the team claimed was a back injury. And a lot of people thought he shouldn't have played this past Thursday, but he did. And in this game, he absolutely received a concussion, and it was terrifying. And as a football fan, it's the worst part of the game.
Yeah.
And I had two quick questions based off of it. First, when the replay showed him, you know, on the ground after the concussion, his arms were up, kind of akimbo, and his fingers were bent out of shape. Like, not like they were broken, but they were like even a claw hand. It was awful. It was terrifying to see.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious, what caused that, and why did that happen? Like, why would his arms and hands do that? And my second question is, you know, after the game, the coach said that he spoke to Tua and said that he was normal Tua and everything seemed fine. But if you truly are concussed, and regardless of how you're talking, that seems like a false positive, or rather a false sense of security. Like, oh, he's talking fine, so he must be fine. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, when you get a concussion, are you really that cognizant so quickly, but can that lull you into a false sense of security? Yeah, just head injuries in general are just scary, man.
Yeah, no shit.
That's all. I just want to call and ask.
No, it's great. It's great question, man. Good question. Go ahead and take it.
Multiple questions. I'll take the first half of this.
Okay.
So what happened was he was first thrown down and hit his head.
Yep.
And when he stood up, he staggered and was listing, and fell down. And the idiot, and I say idiot.
They didn't pick him up.
The idiot that was calling the game says, well, it looks like maybe he hurt his ankle or his knee.
What?
Yes.
He had decorticate posturing.
He did have decorticate, but that was that was the second one.
Okay.
So that's what I'm saying. I'll take the first
half. Go.
So anyway, being a former coach, I can tell you, when kids have head injuries like this, and this was the first one, and they come off with a even if it's a mild concussion, they come across normal for the most part. Mm-hmm. For the most part. And then they'll say, coach, I'm fine.
Yeah,
hey, coach, I'm fine. You as a coach have to say no.
Yeah.
Period.
Take them off the field.
Bottom line, get over here. They have a very specific protocol, allegedly, that they supposedly followed.
Yeah.
And it failed miserably. Now, I don't know where it failed. I wasn't part of it. But
yeah, we don't know.
We don't know. But I can tell you right now, they failed miserably. So the second time, this kid is literally, when he's tackled, because he's not a gigantic guy, he's bear hugged, flipped over, and flipped back, and flipped back in his head, whacks on it. Did you see it? Yeah, he flipped. So he hits his posterior head, his occiput. And that's when he had the posturing.
Well, I knew when he talked about it that so you have decorticate posturing is when you there's decerebrate and decorticate posturing, and this is the cortex is the part of the brain where you'll see it in strokes and stuff.
Right.
It's part of the brain where a lot of processing is done. Mm-hmm. And for the medical students out there, the way to remember it is if it's decerebrate, they will extend as far as they can. And we would say, oh, look, I'm cerebrating. Okay. Like we're having a party.
They're really stretched out.
Like they're going to give somebody a hug.
Right.
And then the other one then would be decorticate. So that's when you're like these, you make claws and they draw up.
Everything draw up. So,
that's usually when you have massive damage to the cortex of the brain.
Exactly.
And it's a very primitive movement that's controlled by the brainstem because the cortex is no longer controlling your movement. Mm-hmm. And when the brainstem takes over, it just can't do all the subtle movements and stuff. And so that's one of the movements that it does. And apparently, he wobbled as he stood back up, and then it was just a disaster. So that is a sign of a massive hit. And so on the second
one,
how long was he out for after that one? They at least recognize that he
they at
to
least,
be up.
Yeah, yeah, because they took him to the hospital. But, you know, the first one.
I don't watch American football, man.
Well, I watch a little bit, but I saw this on the highlights, and you may have seen it on the highlights as well, Dave. Mm. It was appalling to me.
Yeah.
As first a coach and second as a player, I would hope that had I
well, the coaches myself, listen, they're not medical people.
But
they need to
Dr.
be trained.
No, I'm not saying they are. But what I am saying is the head coach.
Yeah.
Is he failed? Period. That head coach has got
to
say.
Yeah, they got to be trained to say no.
But Dr. Steve, that's not the problem. I don't think the problem is money. You know,
do you think that was the coach's thing, or was somebody above him get his ass back on the field?
I don't know. Can't say.
We don't know.
We
weren't there.
But what I can say is
this is Dr. Scott.
Yeah, this is what I can say. The head coach is getting paid by the guys in the booth, right?
Yeah.
And those guys want their quarterbacks playing.
Yeah, he may not even has he come back? He may not come back this season.
Hell,
he may have something long term with this.
He's the same kid when he was at Alabama. You remember this when he broke his ankle? Mm-hmm. Okay, so he had like recurrent ankle injuries, his injuries. So they actually, when he was in college, fused his ankles. They literally fused his tibia because he kept breaking his fibular, lateral fibular head there.
Okay, nobody knows what you're talking about.
His lateral malleola. So
knows that doesn't make it better.
But I'm gonna get to
ankle.
So the bottom of your large lower bone, your leg, your tibia, and a small bone on the outside is the fibula. And a lot of times when you roll your ankle, you break that little bone on the outside.
There you go.
And it's really awful. It's a broken ankle. They went up above that a couple inches and drilled through the two bones in there, and then screwed them together.
Oh, so they made a syndesmosis, whatever,
And then did to the other side so he wouldn't have the same ankle break on that side.
Jesus.
It's insane.
Well, that was preventative. You're always talking about preventative medicine.
That's a little. Yeah, that's true. That's a little drastic. I just hate that. I hate it for everybody involved. I feel bad for the coach.
Synostosis. What is wrong with me today? Good Lord.
But, you know, at some point in time, and you would have hoped one of the physicians after the first one would have said, hey, coach.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
The kid may look good.
Because the coach made the call, but where was the team doctor on that?
And it's an independent neurologist.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be there and say, hey, listen.
Yeah.
And running through the protocol, but I still say.
I know there's a lot of pressure.
There's a lot of pressure.
You know.
But when the kid stands up.
Yeah.
Enlists.
Yeah. No, I get it. You don't have to convince me.
Yeah,
I'm with you.
But
it's like I do when you have Michael Jackson saying, "Give me some of that magic milk again tonight," and it's Michael Jackson. Sometimes it's hard to just say no.
I agree, and that's what I'm saying. I'm not blaming the coach or anybody. I'm just saying it's a tough.
I need my magic
for everybody. I need my magic pill.
I had a mild concussion about 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, who cares?
Dave.
Next question. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead, Dave.
Can we get some music for Dave while he's
poor
doing this?
Poor Dave.
Do we have some like music?
Oh, yeah, I'll give him some music.
Let's hear
here you go.
Let's hear about that.
I wasn't gone in the bathroom
Dave.
That long.
He slipped in the bathroom and hit his head and had a small concussion.
I was in a bike race and crashed.
Oh, no.
Oh, now, did you have a concussion or did you have transient global amnesia?
It was a mild concussion.
Yeah.
So, but I felt fine. It wasn't until, I had a CAT scan immediately and I felt okay. It was the next day when, you know, I was told to, you know, stay home, keep the lights down, don't watch television or your screens. And
fuck that.
After a while, I thought, fuck that. Yeah. So I don't know if I was on my phone or had the TV on or something. And sure enough, it only took a few minutes. I started feeling
really
nauseous. And but up until then, I felt fine. So, I would have been, all right, let's go. So, I mean, I can.
Well, it's like
not
after
I'm defending
you have
the protocol.
It's like when you have propofol too after after a procedure, you feel fine and you're not fine.
No.
But you think you are. Yeah. That's why we are not good judges of that stuff. Coaches are not good judges of it if they're not trained to go, hey, cut the, you know, no, you seem fine and you're telling me you're fine. Because that was this guy's second question. You know, is it possible that he wasn't fine, but he was interacting with him? Yeah.
Totally.
Absolutely.
Totally, yes.
Absolutely.
Totally, yes.
So anyway. All right. I have, you know, no idea how many potholes I stepped in talking about this. So, you know, if y'all are, somebody is pissed because of something that I said, I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. I mean, I know about concussion. I don't know anything about,
protocol.
I don't know anything about sports. I know something about Magic the Gathering.
Yes, you do.
And if you want to talk about people getting mad and flipping tables in Magic the Gathering and throwing all the cards and the dice and the tokens all over.
What about your headache again?
Let's do this. Okay, fuck both of you. Okay, here we go.
Hey, Dr. Steve.
Hey.
Jimmy from Charlotte.
Hey, Jimmy.
Doing great. Thanks for asking.
Oh, I didn't ask.
I was calling to check out what you thought of the product Lumen or products like it, where you breathe into it and check your metabolism.
Yeah.
With all the diet fads out there, it's just this just one more?
Yeah. Okay. So I don't want to speak specifically about a specific, a brand, but there are devices out there that you can blow into and it will tell you your metabolic rate, supposedly. And in the laboratory, we would have people isolated in a almost an airtight room and with a mask on and have them breathe into this thing. And then we would have to do a bunch of complicated, calorimetric calculations and stuff to figure out what their basal metabolic rate was. In other words, how many calories are they burning every hour? So then you could calculate things like, when they're doing exercise, you do it when they're doing exercise. You see the difference, how efficient are they in being an elite athlete or long distance athlete? You can do research like that. Well, now they've got this little thing that you can buy that you just blow in. And I looked at it. It's $250 for 6 months. And then they bill you $25 a month. You don't need to do this multiple times, at least not in the science that we did with this. Plus, I don't know what this thing is. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the mechanism is. Mm-hmm. It's looks like a flatus flute. It's not that much bigger than a flatus flute. And you blow in it, it gives you a number. Hmm. So I didn't have
never heard tell such.
A lot of time to look it up as far as the science, if they had published anything. But I did find, and this is always entertaining, the Amazon reviews. So let's check out a few Amazon reviews. This person says, don't, just don't. And you can guess if it's a 1-star or a 5-star review, okay? One of the other reviews called this an expensive random number generator, and that's 100% accurate. Even after using this thing for 3 months and allowing it time to, quote, calibrate to my individual metabolism, unquote, I was still pulling totally random numbers that don't make sense from one day to the next. You also need the diaphragm and breath skills of an opera singer to get acceptable readings. If you have asthma, you'll likely die trying to get this to work. So, is that a 1-star or a 5-star review? Scott?
1.
Give yourself a bill!
All right. Let's see here. How about this one? Total scam. This is a very expensive device that is interesting at first, but when you realize it doesn't even measure your insulin spikes, which is what contributes to weight gain, it's pure garbage. Don't waste your money on this useless device. 1-star or 5-star?
May I jump in?
Dave, of course.
Yeah. Oh, Dave.
I'm going to go with 1.
Give yourself a bill.
Dang it. Yeah,
they're not following the Carl WATP method where you give somebody a 5-star review and shit all over them in the rankings. Okay, here's one. It doesn't work and they disappear when you need a refund.
I'm saying 1.
Give yourself a bill.
We're on a roll.
Inaccurate and unreliable, gives random results. This thing has the worst reviews of anything I've ever seen on Amazon. 83% 1-star, 17% 5-star, and nothing in between, which makes me wonder about those 5-star reviews.
Yeah, the mom or their aunt, uncle, girlfriend.
It's just one after another after another.
Wow.
And here's one. I bought one for my dad at Christmas, figuring we could get healthier in the new year. Always a good idea. The marketing sounds great, but it's a bit of a scam. This is their words. They don't tell you what your metabolism is, which is how they advertise it in the first place. They give you a score from 1 to 5 about what you're burning, and you don't even get any results for like a month. That doesn't help me. I want to know what my metabolism is, which is what I thought I was buying. So if you really want to do it, you still have to go into the lab and do a true basal metabolic rate and eat fewer calories than you burn, and you'll lose weight.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
And you can do that lots of different ways. Yep. You can do it with a vegan diet. You can do it with a low-carb diet if it's done properly. Hell, you can do it with just portion control. You do whatever you want to do. Hmm. If there was just one way to do it, then we wouldn't have to be having this discussion because we would be doing it. So anyway. But Dr. Scott, you were looking in the waiting room, and Mike was in there talking about multiple myeloma. Hmm. He has multiple myeloma, you said.
He does.
So multiple myeloma is a disease where you have cells that are immune cells called plasma cells that reproduce in the bones, and they go all over the place in lots of different bones, a.k.a. multiple. And then myeloma, these are, you know, blood/immune-derived cells. And there was a really interesting study. You know, we were talking about CAR T-cell therapy. Mm-hmm. And I think we have talked about this before. And if you're interested in reading about it, go to drsteve.com and click on non-pseudoscience cancer cures. There's an article about a patient that they studied using measles vaccine for multiple myeloma. So you're nodding your head. So I've talked about this before.
You have talked about it. I always
read. But you knew about it too.
Yeah, I always read whatever I can about multiple myeloma.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my mother had multiple myeloma a long time ago.
Oh, okay. So before
she's been gone for
I'm sorry.
A long time.
Yeah, that's a rough one.
Yeah.
And it can cause a lot of pain, and there's just it's just tumors in the bones, and it's not a fun cancer, if there is such a thing.
Terrible to watch, too.
Yeah. And so what they found out was, and this is one of those serendipitous things, they just had the idea that measles vaccine, which is a live attenuated virus, loves myeloma cells. And so they gave this person a genetically modified measles vaccine. But the only modification they did was they inserted code for a receptor that would accept a radioactive iodine molecule or atom,
Okay.
And that was it. That wasn't there to treat anything. You think of radioactive iodine, well, you're going to try to kill something with that. No. In this case, they just wanted it as a marker, because it's really easy to detect radioactive iodine in the body using scanners that we already have. Mm-hmm. So they injected 6 million doses.
Yeah, I knew it was really high.
Of measles vaccine. Now, it's still not that much. I mean, it sounded like there was gallons. No, it was probably just in one syringe, maybe a couple of syringes.
Oh, wow.
Because the measles vaccine is highly diluted, you're not giving that many viral particles, and 6 million of them still fits on the head of a pin, basically.
Okay.
So they gave this person 6 million measles vaccine doses, and they got kind of sick. Mm-hmm. Fever, chills, muscle aches and pains and stuff like that. And prodrome went away, they, collection of symptoms before the study was done, they put this person in front of a scanner that could detect radioactive iodine, and all of their myeloma tumors lit up. And about a month later, the person was cancer-free. And what happened was, when those live attenuated viruses went into the cell, what does the body do with that? Well, it goes, you're not supposed to be here. Mm-hmm. So the white blood cells attacked those cells and just fucking killed every one of them. Just fucking killed them all. And that was that. And this person is walking around cancer free. So that is a potential. They are coming up with so many cool ideas. And now, once you do it once, you can reproduce it, if you can reproduce it, if the person didn't just falsify their data. But if you can reproduce it, then you can start to hone in and find the most efficient way and the least with the least amount of morbidity and mortality that you can. It can be the safest way to do it. That'll be the most effective. And so that's coming. You know, multiple myeloma, your days are numbered. Smallpox, dead. Influenza, Yamato, dead. So we're making some progress on some of this shit. Mm-hmm. Sick of it. Stupid cancer, stupid viruses, reproducing to no end, just because they want to.
Because they can.
Because they can.
Reproduction machines.
Yeah. They're just little nano machines that all they do is reproduce and make people fucking sick and kill them. Assholes.
Fuck them.
I hate them. Yeah. Yes, fuck them. That's right. Ugh. That's right. And when they're dead, you know what I'll say? All right. Well, let's do this one real quick because this one Darren has some interest in. And then we'll get out of here.
Hey, Doc.
Ooh.
This is Anonymous in Texas. I was just calling to ask you about
THC
vapes. I know vaping can cause popcorn lung and is obviously not good for you.
Well, can it, though? I mean, that certain vapes were doing that.
So is THC/marijuana vapes same or worse? Or
yeah, okay, good question. So he was worried about in the early days of the vape explosion, we saw these people that had this inflammatory illness of the lung that was deemed popcorn lung because when you did an X-ray, it looked like they were, had popcorn in there. Was lots of little sort of semicircular and circular lesions all over the place. And I think that they determined that some of the fly-by-night vape manufacturers were using vitamin E oil their oil. And that was, they think that's what was causing that. I haven't heard about popcorn lung in years.
No.
And people are vaping more now than they ever were. Mm-hmm. You go behind these people in these cars, and you see they got their window open. You see the giant fucking cloud of smoke. It's amazing. Or vapor.
It can't be healthy.
I bet it's awesome though. I used to love that feeling when I smoked.
You'll be up here huffing.
No, I won't either. I'm over that. But when I used to smoke, I loved that feeling of the. I don't know what it is. This sort of a fullness going into your lung and. And there was something about that. I'm sure they get the same feeling, except more intense. Mm-hmm. I remember my boys were laughing. We were in Asheville, and there's lots of hipsters around Asheville, North Carolina. Yeah. There was this guy sitting out there. He's like, and he had his tunes, man.
Yeah.
The big beard.
Yes. Yeah. And
you're describing me in about
one white glove and a monocle and all this stuff. And the guy's sitting out there. It's like, I think I'll take a toot off of my vape pen, man. And it was this giant contraption, looked like a clarinet. It was huge, black and silver. It was cool looking. I can't say that it wasn't, but he was definitely trying to draw attention to himself. And he took a toot off of this thing and blew out the biggest, most giant, opaque cloud of white vapor that I've ever seen. And the boys were just laughing their asses off. They're like 7 and 9. They just thought that was the funniest thing because the guy was so extremely ridiculous, But anyway. But I bet that feels great if you're a vape person. I'm okay with if you're a smoker going to an FDA-approved vapor or nicotine inhaler. There's a pharmaceutical nicotine inhaler, and doing that as a bridge to getting off of doing everything, to total sobriety. Rich Voss quit smoking, and he's still chewing fucking nicotine gum, at 20 years later or longer than that. And it just shows how addictive nicotine is. It's amazing. Now, I have people who have stage 4 cancer, and they'll say, well, why? By the way, there's no stage 5. And they'll say, well, why bother quitting now? And what I'll tell them is the tar, stuff in the tar causes the cancer, but the nicotine can make it grow faster. Nicotine activates a protein called protein kinase C, which actually can be a tumor promoter. So there is still reason to quit, even if you have stage 4 cancer. And on top of that, you'll feel better. Even if you have a limited amount of time, you'll feel better if you're not smoking. But anyway, All right. Well, listen, thanks go to Dr. Scott. Thanks to Dave from Rhode Island. Thanks, man. It was enjoyable having you here. Thanks for making the trip.
Fantastic.
Really appreciate it. Great to always make a new friend. So, and we've got some prizes here for you. Ooh. And and the home game, the home, the Weird Medicine home game, which only somebody our age will even get that reference. But anyway, listen to our SiriusXM show on the Faction Talk channel, SiriusXM channel 103. Not sure when, Saturdays at 10, or no, Saturdays at 7, Sunday at 10. And on demand. Just listen to it on demand. And other times at Jim McClure's pleasure. It's Wednesday. Jim's back from vacation. I haven't heard anything about whether we've been renewed for another year, so we'll see. Many thanks to our listeners whose voicemail and topic ideas make this job very easy. If they don't renew us, I would like to have a final show, if we could, have some warning to do some stuff. And then we'll just have to accept the fact that we're just a couple of schlunks with a podcast.
Got axed.
The one thing is that's nice having a SiriusXM show, even if it's at 10 p.m. on Sunday, is you're not just some schnook with a podcast. You know, you have some cachet from that. So maybe I will demand emeritus status.
That's reasonable.
If you don't know what that is, look it up. But I'm going to demand SiriusXM emeritus status. Go to our website at drsteve.com for scheduled podcasts and other crap. Until next time, check your stupid nuts for lumps, quit smoking, get off your asses, get some exercise. We'll see you in 1 week for the next edition of Weird Medicine. Thanks, everybody.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.